Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I was supposed to be high on Euphoria and dancing on a table singing Euphoria to the tune of Gloria. No one's going to be standing like high on cocaine, dancing on a table singing cocaine. So I was disgruntled and I complained about it. And somebody told Chuck I was complaining about it. And the message I got back was tell the say the lines like I wrote them.
Did I say that?
Hey there, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. It's now time to dive deep into an episode-by-episode, character-by-character, song-by-song account of the making of your favorite zip code. With your host, Charles Rosen.
I sit in a chair. It's one of Sandy's antiques. The whole thing breaks.
Larry Mullen.
He shouldn't be even in the show. I hope they're going to kill him. And they did.
Pete Ferrero.
My TV crush is Claire Arnold. So, I mean, she has to come on the show at this point.
And representing the fans, Lily Amarin.
Ryan, I love you. I have dreamt about you.
What?
Along with many special guests and your questions. So sit back and relax because it's totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Okay, well, here we are, and boom, Fred Mullen's with us.
My brother, I haven't seen him.
So Melanie Rose is here representing the fans this week. We got to get you in the intro, don't we? Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Fred is muted, so let me fix that real quick.
How's that?
Much better. There we go. So then we have Amy, and I'm going to let you say your last name because I know it's the title.
Amitangelo.
And she is the TV gal, right?
Yep. I write about television. I've been writing about 90210 from way back when.
So she's joining us here. And then, of course, Jill Novick. Tracy is here with us. Jill, how are you?
Yes.
How's everything been going?
Jill.
I called you Tracy. Yeah.
Hi, guys. I'm good. I'm good, considering, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm doing well.
And then Fred Mullen, who scored some of season 7, right, Larry?
Fred did, I think, 12 shows of season 11, and I couldn't have done it without him, really. So it was, as we know, a tough year. And I sound all right. My sound sounds good.
You sound great. Larry, Larry has a microphone now. So
I have a new microphone. Fred, you'd be proud.
We read a review that said we need to amp up our game technical-wise. So we're working for everybody here.
I have high definition. You can see every line in my face. Fabulous.
Hey, I wanted to start this episode. Obviously, today is 9/11. I didn't think it was appropriate if we didn't mention it. So, very tough day for everybody. And I know we all probably can share stories about where we were and all that. For Larry, what do you want to say about this day?
I was not in America. I was in Paris doing a TV show. Actually, I was scouting a strip club when I came out and
lovely.
The French location manager kept tapping me on the shoulder and saying to listen to the thing, and he was translating. And, we were there for another month because we really couldn't go back. So it was a very strange time, and I feel terribly. We're New Yorkers, so we were felt deeply.
Yeah, I was living in New Jersey, and I dealt with it firsthand. It was a very sad day. Jill, how about you?
I was living in L.A. A friend woke me up and told me, you gotta look at the TV, and I went and looked at the TV, and one of the worst days ever. I had a friend that was down there working in on Wall Street, and she was underneath in the subway, and she got out and had to walk with all the people over the bridge, and it was
sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're thinking of everybody as we do this episode about 90210.
Yes.
Listen, I'm going to show you guys on Sunday for all the fans. I am doing a season 8 to 10 episode with Lindsay Price. Here's a little clip from that, which is going to drop on Sunday.
Really, really funny story though. I had approached Curtis at a club. Sort of the last club that Curtis probably was at. Like, I think I either was pregnant with Hudson, my oldest, or I just had him. Mm-hmm. And Curtis is like the most pop culture. Like, he doesn't know anything. Like, he was born down under.
Right.
And like he, so Ian walked up to him and said, "We got the same girl pregnant." And Curtis was like, "Do I have to fight this guy? Like, what? Who's this guy?" You know, because he didn't know. And then, and Ian's like used to being like Ian Deering, like everyone knows who he is. And Ian's like, "No, no, Lindsay." And he's like, "Yeah, I know." And they had this thing, you know. And they actually had a conversation about it because, like, you know, Curtis and I again, like we got pregnant before we got married, and Janet and Steve had sort of the thing. So they had like this beer, and they had like a conversation about it.
So there you go. That's Sun dropping Sunday. That's Curtis Stone is her husband, Larry. Mm-hmm. You know who Jeff is? Yeah. So
no.
That's Curtis Stone. I don't either.
This was after you. This was way. That's all. No. A whole other world for you. Yeah. All right. So hey, now we can dive into this. This is all about Tracy today. I'm curious for you, Tracy. How? I'm sorry, Jill.
I haven't been called Tracy in a long time.
I'm curious for you how you got into. I'm sure you auditioned for the show. How did it come to your world?
Okay, I auditioned for the show many times. So I auditioned for the pilot. For the part of Brenda.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I don't know. Then I was like maybe 23 or something when that was. I think it was when I moved to LA, or maybe the year after that. Anyway, then I also remember auditioning for a character that I think she was a blind pianist or something. Yeah. Does that ring a bell? Okay.
Yeah, sure. Blind so pianist, right up her alley.
Yeah, so I auditioned for that. And then I went to network for Bell. And it was me and Tiffany, and I think maybe one other person, but I can't remember. I just remember Tiffany, of course, because I got there and I was like, oh, well, she's going to get it. She's on, you know, Saved by the Bell, and she was Brian's girlfriend, and she's way sexier than me, so she's going to get it. And she did. So by the time Tracy came along, I had already done so many times. I don't know. I feel like maybe Aaron spoke to my manager and said, no, we really want, you know, we really think this might be the one. This might be the time. And I went in and I remember feeling very confident, a lot more confident than I usually am. I remember the dress I was wearing was like this really tight, short, spaghetti strap red dress. And I felt good. And so that was it.
Hey, for Larry, we had just come off of, I'm going to mention her name, Susan Keats.
Yeah, no.
Right.
There's some,
you know, in Washington, I had to think about that because we wanted to remember where we are in season 7, which when we last left off, you know, Brandon had had his heart broken by Susan Keats, who was a very ambitious, you know, achiever, and someone kind of very much like Brandon himself, and in a way, she was better at it than he was. So we were looking for somebody softer, someone more natural, without the pretense, you know. And we also had to change the venue. We could not go back to the newsroom anymore because that was kind of already been fouled too many times. So we decided to invent the TV studio and CU TV, and then we cast two people with long term contracts. We had cast the because we needed another guy. We cast the head of the TV station, the student's head of the TV station, who played a character named.
Mark Reese.
Mark Reese. Yes, thank you. And we cast Tracy Galian, who was going to become Brandon's girlfriend and also the anchor woman. And she was going to be a natural you know, just a, you know, a genuine person, authentic, you know, not a Beverly Hills girl, you know, as it turns out, as we see in what we're going to cover on Necessary Roughness, you know, she has, you know, country roots, has Galeon Ranch, which I really liked, actually.
Yeah.
and you know, and it's been fun seeing how the character developed, because I hadn't seen these episodes, and going through them was really good. And she'll did a great job.
Let me ask you this, Larry, up at the top of this. We just mentioned Mark Rees. And at some point in this season, we don't see Mark Rees anymore.
Yeah, you know, this is a this happens in shows, especially shows that run a while, because you always are in a situation, you know, people become stars and you have to negotiate their contracts and they have more leverage. And I think we had a little bit of a conversation before us, but, you know, kissing was something we expected actors to do. And now it's a big deal when you're on a stage, they have to get permission and they frame it right. But then if you were an actress, and Jill knows this, the script said, kiss somebody, you got to kiss them. And you got to, you know, you're an actress. You want to put yourself in that character and be a great kisser if that's what it calls for. And I think we just ran into a kissing problem. I'm going to simplify the whole thing.
I think that is.
I'm going to make the whole thing go away. And I'm just going to say there was a kissing problem on the set. And so that character then had to find an exit. And so that, and when I say this, it's really painful for the writers because we're doing 32 episodes a year, which no one has ever done. The whole game for us is keeping ahead. And now we're told we got to go backwards and fix stuff and basically find someone to get out because there's a kissing problem.
Yes. So I'm just going to let you off the hook on that because, thanks. You know, but you do go into Aaron Spelling's office and find out officially that
that was explosive. Cause again, Aaron Spelling knows that we're like, 7-8 episodes up and we've been busting our butts. Now he's going to tell us the kissing problem and he's got to find a way for us to really buy it. So he doesn't say kissing. He says basically something that's so heinous about the person just to get us riled up. I'm not even going to say it. It's so heinous.
No, don't.
Oh, go ahead and say it.
No, I'm not saying it because I remember being with Steve Wasserman in particular for this particular character. And it's not, he's the only one. This happens all the time. When people, you know, especially again, stars, you know, they want a comfort level and we want to accommodate them. We need them. So, I went up there with Steve Wasserman and Aaron told us this heinous thing about the real person. And we're going, what? We're getting rid of this guy. And he says, yeah. And we walked out of the door and went, he just totally bluffed us, man. And we fell for it.
Yeah.
And we did. And we, you know, and unlike Chuck, see, Chuck was a battler. Chuck would say, I don't care. You know, I don't believe you. Jack would battle him, but I'm the other way. I'm going, all right, we got stuff to do. I'll change it. But, you know, it's just writing. What I mean, what's the difference?
Yeah.
That's
in case anybody's wondering. And I'm sure one day we'll dive deeper into that whole.
Deep. The kiss.
We'll go way deeper. For Jill, you get to set and you find out that you're going to, what do you find out? Do you find out that you're going to be a love interest of Brandon's or
yes, so and I was told that my character was there to keep Brandon and Kelly apart for another season so that they could see what was going to happen after that. So basically, I knew what I was there for. Of course, I always hoped that they would keep me, like, find some way, like, right. Oh, because I remembered, like, Kathleen. I thought Kathleen was not a series regular, and then she stayed, right? And so in the back of my mind, the whole time, I'm like, maybe it'll be like Kathleen, and maybe they'll keep me. And, you know.
It happened to Jamie, too. Jamie Walters also.
Oh. Not sure,
you know? But then look what happened. I guess it's just a hit show. It's hard to keep it together. But you did
have this happen a few times this season, Larry, right? Where people
We did. And, you know, it was a challenge for the writers to continue to go backwards, you know. They made for a lot of stuff, and it was definitely good. But, you know, I do have a saying I've said before on the show, you had to serve the show, and that's what we needed her character to do. We had a long game with Kelly and Brandon at the end of the season because we knew where we were going. And we just really wanted to break his heart. And you made him suffer, which was so good. I mean, you know, it was, you know, he really seemed to care. And it goes back and forth. It's totally unlike the Susan Keats thing.
Totally. Yeah. Larry, do you remember Jill's audition? Do you remember seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And she was exactly what we wanted. I mean, we wanted someone refreshing and genuine and you know, just not Beverly Hillsy and just someone who could be an anchor woman, that kind of, you know, America's darling kind of thing. And, you know, and she didn't have to be so sexy like Tiffany was. I mean, it was just a different thing because, you know, Brandon, he's looking for substance too. And look, it was, the thing was, and again, the ace in the hole we had and why you were doomed was we knew we were doing a workplace romance, which never works out.
Right.
Right. We learned that last season, right? In season six. Yeah. So I'm sorry, just so you get told that you're going to be doing this, right? And so do you meet Jason fairly early on?
I met him, I think my first day there, and I was in the production office and he walked in and I was so nervous. I can't even tell you. It was, that was like, I heard Christine talk about, the first day of school. Like that's what it, what came to my mind was, oh my gosh, this is like the first day of school. I'm so nervous. I've been watching this show for 6 years, right? Even though I've auditioned for it 3 other times, but this was like, I finally am here. I'm the new girl in school.
Yeah.
Like it was, and so, yeah, I remember meeting Jason in the production office and I remember being super nervous. And I also remember his eyes, his blue eyes were just beautiful. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
Susan, or Emma told us that she always had a crush on Jason, so that when she, you know, was working with him, she was sort of like drawn into the story, you know. Did you have
similar? Yeah. You know, I can't even remember. I started to think about it, whether I was a Dylan or a Brandon girl, and honestly, can't even remember. But of course, I was thrilled to be working with him, and yeah, I thought he was adorable, and I was sort of. But you know what? I think at that point, to be honest, I think Jason was over it, you know, and I don't think that there was a lot of. I mean, I think sometimes we had chemistry, but I don't think it was like as good as it could have been.
Mm. Interesting.
It was a, you know, season seven people came in with a, you know, they were tired. We had just done, you know, 3 seasons of 32 episodes, hours a year, and people were pretty ragged.
Right. And he was also producing and directing.
Yes.
Which is where his, I think that's where what he cared about at that point.
I'm curious for Amy, when you were watching this back in the day, what were your thoughts as we transitioned from 6 to 7?
You know, it's funny because I was watching and I really remembered about the Tracy character. What I think I liked about, well, first of all, I loved Dylan. So I didn't have any confusion about who was my favorite. Dylan was like my first bad boy, like that ever, like the first TV bad boy, my forever TV bad boy. But what I loved about Brandon's character is I loved the women he dated, right? He always dated the women who I thought looked kind of reminded people like I would know, or I would have gone to school with, or my friends. It's like gave you that feeling that, like, you know, it was someone, they were very down to earth characters, and they were not larger than life than some of the other characters on the show were. So I really loved that. And I think that's why I love the Tracy character. And I think you're like, I don't know if we as viewers thought the relationship was doomed, but I think we really bought into it for that whole year that they, you know, we didn't realize, you know, I don't remember thinking, well, she's just here.
Right.
Until Kelly gets back together with Brandon. Yeah. I also really wanted Kelly with Dylan. So like, I was like, I think I was like, that's great. You go off with Tracy. That's going to be wonderful. I really liked it. I think I was, when I went back and watched the episodes preparing for this, there was so much I had forgotten. And then I was saying to you before, I forgot. And then I remembered almost at the same time that of how much happened that season.
Yeah.
And what it was like, I know they were in college, and how many people lived in the Walsh house. I was like, it was like a boarding house. And like season 7, I was like, you know,
it, like, it saved on sets. It saved on sets. I felt really badly for Tracy. We put her in a dorm room. One of the episodes, I realized, oh my gosh, she's like a senior in college and she's in a dorm room.
Actually, I wasn't a senior. I was a year younger than them.
Oh, okay, then you mean? Yeah, I mean, it was a nice dorm.
It was nice. Personally, I liked the fact that they gave her a dorm room, you know, like a place that was her space.
I thought she had it sitting there, right, Larry? Didn't you have somebody's dorm room from previous season maybe just hanging around?
Oh, yeah, it was. That was Andrea's probably dorm room. Yeah, they'd already built that set. Yeah. We have to talk to Fred. He's getting bored. Fred?
Yeah. Not at all. No, I mean, first of all, everyone looks glorious, and it's fun to see Jill. I haven't seen her since I watched the episode. So.
Yeah. Larry, why? How did you bring Fred into the mix of doing the
nepotism?
A gun.
Nepotism. Get it out of the way.
A gun to my head. No. We had always worked together. We've been a creative partnership since we were, you know, Fred was a, you know, since he was a high school dropout, he's a pure musician, and we've always done stuff. So it was a great pleasure to be able to bring him in. You know, season seven, going into it, there were a lot of changes, as we said, and a lot of the, you know, people were gone, and people were, you know, it was just a different year, so we needed new things. And I was really fortunate because I had a good shorthand with Fred, because, you know, basically the composing thing, just to quickly see it, I mean, we see all these moments, like, let's just take the first episode that Fred did, which was Unnecessary Roughness. You know, that whole thing, we get into the mood of the opening titles where he's basically, it's kind of like a running on empty track. Did you watch the thing, Fred? I thought it was a pretty good track.
Yeah, no, I refreshed my memory. Because Larry and I literally, when he was in college and I was, whatever, 14 years old, and, a musician already, we had wrote songs together, and we've been sort of best friends and collaborators on many levels for all these years. And then I produced records for years. And then in 85, I was based out of Canada again, and I started to compose for TV and film. And in 87, I had a big change in my career where I got some very successful TV series I was scoring, which, you know, I never expected myself to be a film composer. It was the exact opposite of who I am, but it was a great way to make a living, and I did pretty well with it. And by the time that 90210 came calling, thanks to Larry, I really was a pretty well-known entity as a TV and film composer. So it wasn't like he had to really, you know, convince them. I really was someone who had a pretty good run. But it's interesting, one of the big series that I had done from 87 till 90 was a series for Paramount called Friday the 13th, the series. And it wasn't the Jason horror movies. It was more like a Twilight Zone every week. And it ran for 3 years. And it gave me a lot of background in writing suspense music. And so in Unnecessary Roughness, you've got the stalker, and you've got all those scenes, and that was really easy for me to draw upon what I had been doing for years on other TV series. So that episode, particularly when Larry gave that one to me, that was really easy for me because I knew how to make the tension and the drama.
Well, what about the kissing? Oh, there was no kissing. There was kissing.
No, that's
it wasn't Tracy.
There was kissing in the haystack.
No, she was drunk in that episode. That's I have to say, okay, we don't have Semel here. I was kind of delaying because he delivered her into the universe. But I felt like a little bit watching this for myself that we had kind of let her down a little bit. I didn't really like some of the moves. The writers had let the character down in the delivery of the character. It just felt a little bit could have been better. And, you know, and so I was going to kind of get on David Semel about that a bit. But he's not here now. But anyway, you know, again, it played through. And like I said, we needed to launch that character, and she was adorable, basically. And that was the basic thing about that episode. We wanted to just have someone who had who was not worried about perception. It was just basically, and then we find out a country girl. Because that's episode four in the season.
Yeah, that's
episode
disappearing.
16.
We're talking about disappearing
act. Disappearing
act. Disappearing act, yeah.
Sorry,
I was so nervous.
And then episode 16, so that's 12 episodes later before you sleep with Brandon, which is pretty good. A lot of girls don't make 12 episodes. That's holding it a long time. Keeping her at bay. But then that's where we really see her. And that's the episode I think we really get to appreciate the character. We understand her background and stuff. And you just see that she's a country girl, which is a wonderful, some character we never had.
Brad says he had a crush on Tracy.
So. Aww.
That's very nice.
That's nice.
Yeah, right. And then Dana says Melanie Rose is her favorite. There's Melanie Rose right there. And Brian is loving the insight of Fred as a composer. So these are some of the things people are saying. I'm just curious, Jill, what were some of the things that you shot first? Do you remember what some of the scenes were? I'm sure it's disappearing act, but I'm sure.
Yeah. And I think it was all TV studio stuff. And I was so nervous. I went back and watched that one and was just like, oh my God, you were terrible. I thought I was terrible just because I was so nervous. You know, it just was like,
you were playing a nervous character.
A part of the story in Disappearing Act is that you are nervous, right? That
you're, that's okay. I think,
It definitely moves too fast.
Some of the beats in that story move too fast.
The thing that was hard for me that I found really interesting was the newscasting stuff, because I had never had to speak directly to camera before. I'd never done any of that. And so that is what got me nervous. It was that part of it.
Interesting, which is what also for your character was nervous speaking on camera.
Yeah.
And then there's all those great scenes with you and Mark and Brandon at the bar.
Drinking. But like even that, when I watched it, I was like, oh my God, it was not, I didn't think it was good, but all I could remember was sitting there and just feeling the nerves, you know, and just wanting to do really well. And I don't know.
It was hard. But we could talk about Unnecessary Roughness. That's the
I think Unnecessary Roughness, things really come alive. I mean, you go there and you see the character and you see Brandon's, you know, what he likes about her. Again, it's just the exact opposite of Susan Keats. It's just not someone who's like career driven. She's in the moment, basically. And you know, she appreciates the country stuff. They have the whole thing with the horse. And I mean, we got the cockamamie guy, Sam. I feel bad about that. Oh. That is a little bit similar to what we did with Susan Keats and Jonathan. So I didn't feel great about that, seeing that for myself. I felt a little okay. But then again, you know, I've got reasons, but I'm not going to tell them.
Larry, wait, I've got to ask this question. Who did you create Tracy? Who created Tracy? Who gives her $30?
John Eisengraf was the first one to pen the character, but we had created the character and basically gave him, you know, the parameters of what we, you know, what we were looking for. I mean, he had to deliver the thing. He just happened to end up in that script. And
I think she's asking for her character, Tracy.
Yes, Tracy. Tracy Galleon appears for the first time in a John Eisendraft script. So he gets the character.
$30.
That's how the game works. Every time, you know, we all fight for that. But it just fell that way. Sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I had Mark, okay? I picked the wrong one.
You picked the wrong one.
This was a big debate. And last, on Wednesday's show, Larry, you weren't with us.
I know. We shouldn't talk about it. That off it's air. Off the record, I think, at this point. You know, shouldn't get out to the airwaves.
But this is a great episode for Jill. I think that, are you finding your way in this character now when you get, by the time we get to Unnecessary Roughness?
Yes, very much so in most ways. Although I'm not quite sure how much Tracy the newscaster gelled with Tracy the cowgirl. I don't know, but yes. Because it was the same kind of thing as the dorm room. Like, oh my gosh, they're doing a whole episode where if Tracy gets to go home to her, you know, and so that was really great, and it was really fun also because Jason and I got to, like, you know, go on location in Thousand Oaks for the day, and it was fun. It was really nice to see that she had a life before she got.
We had a lot of episodes to go still, so we need to keep that going. And then Fred had to score the after sex the morning though.
Oh, really?
That must have to reach deep for that, Fred, or did you have to be morning after when they get up?
No, I hate to tell you, you know, but after about 1,000 episodes scored,
there we are.
You know, I have no real deep recollection except that I was. You know, the way I composed a score was I'm a performer by nature, so I would improvise as I watched the scene with my keyboard, and then I'd overdub, and I would, you know, create the sound and the scope of what I was doing in that scene, that score, that moment. But there were so many that I can't give you the kind of important revelations that you want. But again, you know, you try to be sensitive to the moment, and on top of it, you know, you're very much every cue I wrote, and we're talking thousands and thousands of them. Every cue I wrote was written to make sure I pleased the product and the people and the director.
The show.
And the
producers, yeah. You know. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, part of the process is Fred would sit down with, you know, I think it was us or Kenny Miller, who was the music guy, and this.
Yeah, I would fly in every episode.
Would be spotted, so you'd go through the film and go, the cue starts here, dum bum, cue out here, starts here, out here. So you basically what's called spot the picture for music and effects also.
But so the goofy part was that I was in Toronto because I'm a dual citizen and was based out of Toronto, but because Larry was in LA and because I was an American, I could go back and forth. So I would come in literally for a day just to have a 2-hour spotting session because Kenny Miller refused to do it long distance. So I would fly in every 2 weeks and spot the show, which is where you would, you know, we'd watch the show and I would say, or Larry would say, or Kenny would say, well, we'd like some music underneath this. And, you know, you definitely have to be here for this. And then I would say, well, yeah, but maybe not here. And I'd make my notes and I'd go back to Toronto and I'd write the show and literally, I think we would FedEx the mixes to LA.
Yeah. Wow. Sherry Weiss, our good friend, asks for Jill, did it feel like you were double acting when you had scenes with Tracy at the CUTV anchor desk? You had to play Tracy, but you also had to play Tracy as the TV.
Yeah,
it was hard. That definitely was the hardest part of the job, was doing that. I remember there was an episode where I was like at the school doing it, and at any time that I had to like look directly in the camera and do that, it was very nerve-wracking for me. And I do think, I got a lot better as I went along, you know? You get more comfortable the more you do it, so.
Yeah. Do you remember doing some of this with Jason? These beautiful, yeah, touching moments between the two characters?
I do. Well, one of the reasons I really do is because I used that scene on my reel for a while. So I saw it like over and over and over again, you know? Yeah. That was like a really great episode because we got closer. It was just the two of us there. And of course, Sam, but you know, so it was really, it was fun and it gave me a chance to really sort of dig into the character a little bit more with the whole horse. I was afraid of horses.
I was going to ask you that. Did we ever ask you that question before?
I don't think anybody asked. If they
probably should have done that.
If they did, I probably would have been like, "No, it's fine." But I had to like pet the. I was like in the stall with the horse, and then had to come out. And I remember the horse kind of went like that, and I saw it when I watched the episode, and I was like, "You guys." I was nervous about the horse, but
well, Wednesday, you know, we learned Christina Lise doesn't know how to play guitar, Dylan doesn't know how to surf,
and I'm afraid of horses.
The worst one is when you assume someone can drive a car, they actually can't. I had a situation where, you know, the actor is supposed to drive up in front of like a sports arena and get out, you know, in a hurry. And he did all that, but he forgot to put it in park. So the car was going right at the camera.
And that 90210 or somewhere else?
No, that was a movie, Borderline Normal. We were in Regina.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Very good movie. That script got me my job on Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh, very cool. All right, so let me show. I have a scene here. I think I have a scene I pulled. This happened.
I found in the refrigerator.
It's an incredible present.
You like champagne?
Of course. And the answer is yes.
I'm sorry, I must have missed something. What was the question?
I couldn't help it. I found it in the drawer. That's why you asked me to get a t-shirt, isn't it? I love you. What's wrong? This isn't for me.
Trace,
Wow.
The beginning of the end.
What show is that from?
I think that's actually from my ring.
With this ring.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually, she finds the ring in the episode prior. I think I had to dig through. My Funny Valentine.
I think so. Wasn't from this ring.
No.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you know, it's pretty good stuff, though. I'm very proud of this this storyline. Thank you so much for being part of it, Jill and Fred. But yeah, I mean, we really, you know, again, doing 32 episodes and keeping this crazy, all these little convolutions alive and all these misreads where he thinks, she thinks, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Seeing it now, I'm appreciating it more.
Emily Robinson says that was a tough moment. And,
it was.
And Robin says it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the next show, though, with this ring, but Brandon returns the ring in this one. He kind of recommits to you.
I think he goes to some Nazi jeweler.
He does.
He goes to some blonde-haired Nazi jeweler.
You know that's Jason, right?
Fred? What's that?
He doesn't know.
No, I'm saying, but he goes to a jeweler.
Yeah, that's right. That's Jason. He plays two parts.
What?
Yes.
I just watched it a little bit today, and I'm like, no, what a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Himself as he could get. I mean,
it was Hans something from the Black Forest.
That's right. So, Larry, I guess my question is: you knew this whole season was about Brandon and Kelly.
Yes.
And
well, not I shouldn't say that because, you know, again, we did cast this other gentleman to start the season with as Kelly's boyfriend. We were basically going to work Mark Reese into Kelly's life. You know, he was going to be the real blue blood, you know, like the, you know, the Nantucket guy, beyond Beverly Hills in a certain way, you know, real old money, you know, Orange County, probably more likely, you know, Reagan's kitchen cabinet kind of thing, the Dart family, people we knew. And it just didn't work out because, you know, the kissing problem.
So. Didn't like
kissing him. Do you remember doing that? I think that's a David Semel scene, the My First Time.
Oh, maybe, yes, David did My Friday Valentine.
Yeah.
Okay.
What a beautiful job. But yeah, David did also Judgment Day, also, which Tracy was in. He did three episodes with Tracy was in. And so I know he wanted to be here. But
yeah. So do you remember when you got to, you knew that you were coming down this pathway, right? Like that we're going to, do you know that this is going to be how it's going to play in, like with the ring and this whole nine? Or are you learned that as you're reading the scripts each week as they present them to you?
Yeah, I didn't know about the ring. I learned it as we went along. Yeah.
And do you remember sort of shooting that scene?
I do. Because I remember I remember there was a scene in the bed before that. And
that's right.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was like she was so happy. Everything was going the way she wanted, you know. So I do. Yes, I remember. I remember us filming in his bedroom in the bed. And then I remember that finding the ring. I don't, and that's about all I remember about it. I just remember that, like, yes, she's feeling happy and great, and they had a great time, and yeah.
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 Chase says we need the kissing problem t-shirt. Great idea, Chase. I couldn't stop giggling.
I'm glad. I didn't have a kissing problem.
I have some notes on your kissing. I have good kissing
kissing problems.
You had some excellent kissing and unnecessary roughness, I thought.
So this would be no, like Amy said, this is no kissing
problem. No kissing problem with a circle flash.
Exactly. You know, I always want to remember Phil Savath because Phil Savath was a big part of this ring story. He wrote, I believe, with this ring and certainly wrote, you know, the last four episodes of this season with me or rewrote them, and he's no longer here, so I always like to remember him. Fred and Phil and I were friends and colleagues together in Toronto. We had our own theater and we loved him so much. Anyway, he had a lot of the heart of this stuff and a lot of the crazy stuff also, because I know we're going to get to Long Goodbye, but I do want to tell you that we did write that song, the Royal Canadian Love Song, in case you're asking.
Oh really? Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you go.
I was going to say, there's also some episode in the mix of all this where Tracy meets Jim Walsh, right, in Hong Kong.
Yes.
Right. I know we didn't watch that. But I've had some people asking me about working with, because you're a fan of the show, and then working with James Eckhouse. What was that like for you?
It was really fun. I'm so bad. I really don't remember specifically about him, but I do remember being like, oh, great, I get to meet the dad, you know?
Right,
that's about all I remember
that's
about
him. No, he's not going to be offended. He's okay. He'll handle it okay. Okay, then we get into Heaven Sent, guys.
Well, you know, it was good to see this one. Again, I just want to see who wrote that one. So I have to give credits here. You know, it's really important, I think. So that was written by John Welpley and directed by Anson Williams.
Who everyone
knows as Potsy from Happy Days. He had done a bunch for us. He's a wonderful director, had a nice touch. And this episode, I thought, really cooked and had some lovely stuff in it. And had this callback character where I was getting a character payment. Okay, so I brought the character back.
For the 30 hours,
I brought my Ea Campbell back playing the character Mariah. Right. But really worked great. It, you know, again, we were looking for ways to kind of subtly separate Brandon and Tracy. And you put now, he brings some other woman there, and Kelly's a friend, befriends her. And
right.
She just kept grinding it. It was just, you know, you got to keep grinding this stuff. And it worked great. And she was lovely in it. And we know our heart goes out to Maia Campbell, who I think is still with us, but she's really on the streets of Atlanta somewhere, and you know, she's has a terrible addiction problem. And
oh no,
you see a terrible YouTube video about
it. You can pull that up on YouTube, yeah.
Sad story.
That is sad.
Maybe, you know, and if people in Atlanta, you know, they know more than we do, probably, but yeah, that episode I thought really, again, you know, we kind of, you know, took a chance here because we're always looking for new music stuff. So we said, yeah, what about new age music? You know, what the heck? We haven't done that. So we have a harpist. And of course, we have Your Attitude, which is like, what a bunch of bogus bullshit. And again, it helps it because Brandon's trying to believe it. And so it just, I thought, worked really, really well. I was very happy with the episode.
It also totally tracked that Kelly would go for that, right? That totally fit with her character, too. You weren't surprised that she was, like, she was in a cult, right? Like, she totally tracked that she would go
in line with her history.
Yeah. Exactly. It's all in line with her personality. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very funny. Yeah. I mean, I guess, do you remember that episode, Jill, when you rewatched that? What did you think of that? I mean, you're very cold to poor
anything. That kind of bothered me. That I feel like, there was a time when she says something really snarky, when Tracy says something really snarky, and I was like, whoa, why are you doing that? I the jealousy just really took over. And, you know, like, I remember in the first scene, she's all, I'm smiley, and how nice to meet you, and everything, but then the second Kelly comes in, it's like, oh, no, for, you know.
Just the way we planned it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I remember as the actor being jealous and like, you know, kind of through the whole thing, just like, no, he should like Tracy. He should love Tracy, you know.
Yeah. That must be the Brandon Walsh thing, because Emma said the same thing, Larry, if you remember that, right? She said,
I know.
I remember shooting the scene outside when I was, when she was talking. I remember like the other stuff, you know, like I remember Anson and I the not actually filming stuff, but just the kind of hanging out stuff.
You know what I noticed in this episode? You become a little bit of a mean girl. You just kind of hang out with the mean girls a little bit, like Valerie and you. Which, believe me, that actually was a good place to go because you could have gotten picked up for that. You know, the mean girls were there were a whole other bunch. But yeah, I mean, yeah. So she was getting integrated into the group there, which was good. But, you know, it was the mean girl. But
I think in that episode, one of the episodes, you go and confront Kelly, right? What was it like working with Jenny?
The long goodbye, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that was that the one when I go and I
think so, yeah.
Did you know that he still had the ring? And
right, yeah.
Well, actually, yeah. With this ring. That's with this ring. Which,
with this ring. That was one of my favorite scenes. That was also on my reel. you know, I didn't get a chance to work with Jenny very much. It was kind of like that episode especially. And maybe another one in the TV studio. Anyway, I didn't work with her very much. I loved working with her in that scene. That's what I remember. I feel like she made me sort of a little more relaxed. And I really liked the chemistry between us. I really liked that scene.
I love it. I think it's something that the two of you just worked so well together in that. Go ahead.
Somebody said. I was gonna say it's two nice women too. I mean, I feel like that's the thing too, is that they're not, it wasn't a rivalry of like the mean girl. I mean, she was a little bit mean in this, but in general, there are two other really kind characters on the show who both, you know, both like Brandon. And in Tracy's defense, she had just found him with a ring for another girl. Like it was a time to be a little mean girly, I think.
Yeah.
Plus with his reputation, I mean, there's always the specter of Kelly was hanging around. I mean, for season after season. So you made him suffer.
What was Tiffany like to work with Jill?
Tiffany was great. She was very professional. You know, she knew her stuff. I remember her flirting with the crew a little bit. That's one thing I remember. But no, we had a great time. I remember that episode when we were in the mall. It was like Christmas time and she and I were shopping. And then like in between like setups, we went to Old Navy or something and we were trying on jeans in the dressing room. I remember that. That was fun.
Well,
it was fun.
But did you tell her that you were up for?
Yeah, we were there. We were at the audition together. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff. I also love Larry, the scene that with Brandon and Kelly at the end of Heaven Sent.
Heaven Sent. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jason did a beautiful job directing this thing. And Fred scored this thing. Yeah, you saw that scene, Fred, where you see them walking away from each other, like as an overhead shot. You're talking about that one there?
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful setup, and you see that, you know, this kind of, not star-crossed love, is the exact opposite, but they just can't connect. I mean, they just not in the right place here or in the universe. I can't remember why we got rid of Maia so abruptly,
I was going to ask you that.
I don't remember. Did she not show up for
She
work?
Didn't show up to the new, very new age.
All of a sudden, we say, funny. Oh, yeah, she had to catch an earlier plane. We gave that. I'm going like, she had to remember.
What happened there? Yeah.
I don't know. It was a mystery to me. I'm thinking like, that just seems odd to me. I wouldn't have written that. I would have had a goodbye. I mean, the only thing I can say is maybe we ran long and had to cut the goodbye scene out, or there was one more scene. I can't remember.
Could be.
I
mean,
I think I did write the thing with Phil, I think.
Hey, Jill, what is it like working with Jason when he's directing? Because that's different, right? He's acting, when you're acting with him is one thing, but then he's acting and directing you. What is that like?
What I can remember. I talk about professional, you know, he's very professional. Very like I trusted him, you know, I felt like I was in good hands.
Yeah.
That's really all I remember. I just know, and also like, okay, this is where he is at right now. You know, this is what's getting him jazzed up, not Brandon, but directing. Yeah.
And then we do get to the long goodbye. I'm going to show this scene as well. The
I was going to say that was Les Sheldon, and it was a script credit to Ken Stringer, who was our first AD.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure Phil and I did lots of rewriting on this too. It's really a powerful episode, I thought.
Yeah, I think it's one of the best ones of season 7. All right, here's the scene, the opening, I think.
I don't know how to start this exactly, but I have to.
What?
I don't think we should see each other anymore.
You serious?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not as into this relationship as you deserve someone to be.
What does that mean?
It means I just keep making the same mistake.
So that's what this whole year has been? A mistake? Is that what you're saying?
No. I just shouldn't be involved with someone I work with.
If that's what this is about, I'll quit.
No. I think we screwed up a great friendship.
Please don't tell me you want to be friends. I could never be friends with someone who could treat me like this.
Believe me, Trace, I didn't mean to hurt you.
How much I hurt isn't your business. Please leave.
Wow.
You know, that's such good dialogue, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's devastating. We've all been there. It's not a happy conversation, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's a terrible thing. I mean...
But it was honest too. I liked that it was honest.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. This episode, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on, but I mean, she doesn't give up. That's the thing about Tracy now. She kind of goes around and she goes to Valerie and they keep working Brandon a bit. And you know, it becomes hard in this thing. Part of this thing in this episode also, which I had forgotten about, and was the talent show. We had this whole, you know, because again, those kids are in their final year of college and we got to make up this whole talent show. You didn't get to the talent show, but I did want to point out, and Fred is a big part of this too, but Phil, Fred and I wrote the sketch song, Royal Canadian Love Song, which is phenomenal. And we do make about 12 cents a year on that.
I was going to say, we make about $15 a year.
Wow. You are. Wow.
Where's my hot dog? That was so much fun watching that. That was hilarious. I thought it was great. And then the whole thing, was hilarious.
She was. And then the whole thing with her mother, you know, because we had Catherine Cannon on the show and she's terrific. And seeing her work again, she's going to come back on October 4th. I got to go send a note out to her. But yeah, it's just great. And again, part of the show, and maybe the reason that people like Amy and Melanie love the show, is we keep bringing back the rich history. So if you keep watching the show, you get rewarded. There's an equity in being a long-term watcher because we never forget anything, at least until season 7, where we bring stuff back. And you bring back Donna's affair with, you know, that goes back to season 3, right? Yeah. The Bellagio Hotel. I mean, and we just keep bringing those strings back. And then the other thing I have to say before we get back to Jill, not to tell me on her, but I had totally forgotten that we had really bought into this. We created Dylan's character without having Dylan.
Yes.
That was really great.
Dylan wasn't there. Yeah.
No, I mean, we made this work. I'm going, oh my God, Dylan's coming. I can't even
When did this happen?
I mean, we kind of threw it out. Maybe he would come back. You know, it was still possible, but we created the whole illusion that he was living with Brenda and again, create this, again, the triangle there without even having two parts of the triangle. So I thought that was great. We sold that. And I was really, that's really what I was excited about. See?
I want to ask you a couple things before we get to the Jill's storyline. The Dylan thing, do you guys ever reach out to Dylan? I mean, that's season 7 now, right?
Yeah.
So there's been some time since he's gone. Do you guys ever reach back around and say, hey, Luke, do you want to come back and do a thing?
Oh, it's definitely a conversation, you know. Wouldn't it be great? I mean, like, you know, just come back for an episode. Just we'll pass you in the airport. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah, we went there. But, you know, it was at that point he was still, you know, finding his career. And, you know, there are things he wanted to do. He had, you know, left the show for, you know, reasons and wasn't ready to come back.
I think as a Kathleen Robertson fan, this scene with Claire singing the song is so beautiful, and it's
hard to believe it worked. Can't believe it worked.
This is the scene and the storyline that I want to talk to you about on the show. This thing with her mother and the touching stuff with Ian and the
beautiful. You
know, she's such a beautiful actor. You know,
we had big plans.
I'm gonna let you sit there on that. But for Jill, do you remember Lee? This was the end, you know, beginning of the end here, or the end, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you remember shooting some of these last scenes with Jason? And
It was really sad. It was really sad for me because I knew that was it, you know. I'll tell you what I do remember is we were doing double ups, and I was in both shows at the same time, and both of my last scenes I was celebrated. They brought me, they both, I think both crews, I had a cake, you know, goodbye, we're going to miss you kind of thing. I was given gifts, like clothes that I wore on the show with like a 90210 patch in, you know, like that's what I remember. It was
Paul Wagner.
It was so lovely. And, you know, I have some Polaroids from that day where like a picture of the cake on one. It was, that was, you know, it was emotional enough just to be acting those scenes that were so emotional. But what I really remember about it was the send off, and it was just, it was so nice. It really was.
Now this is, Melanie's going to ask some fan questions, but just, I don't know if this is one of them, but they did, this is past Larry's time, they do bring you back in the eighth season, right?
Hawaii! Yeah.
So tell me how that call came. And
okay.
Sorry, Larry.
So that call, so yeah, I was done, right? And Tori and I actually became really, really good friends during that season. And I don't remember if I found out from her or whether I got the call first, but they said, hey, they want you to come back and do the opening of the season in Hawaii. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, no. So, I mean, I was so excited. I had never been to Hawaii before. My character never really got to say goodbye to anybody. We never knew what happened to her. And it was amazing. It was like a dream come true, especially because Tori was terrified to fly. And she was so excited that I was coming so I could like hold her hand through the whole flight and everything. Which I thought was really funny when I was watching the reboot. She was fine on the plane, and then it got brought up later on that she had a fear of flying. But
well, Aaron was famously afraid of it.
Oh, really?
Aaron was famously, he never flew. He even owned his own rail card at one point so he could go to Vegas.
Wow.
No way.
Well, that must be where she got it from. But yeah
definitely. No, the story that he would tell was that he was supposed to be flying back from World War II, where he was a soldier, supposedly. I think he was. At least, you know, not at the front, but he was a soldier. And the plane that he was supposed to be on went down. And his mother was so upset that he promised his mother that he would never fly again.
Yeah, so Hawaii was amazing. That was amazing. And yeah, I did not know it was going to happen. We finished at the, you know, I don't know when we finished, like May or something. And then, and then it was summer.
July would be late July.
Late July, August. And yeah, so I had a few months of not, you know, just thinking it was completely over. And then I got that really nice surprise. Yeah.
Renee B says she loved getting to see Tracy again and that she was happy and settled, or settled and happy. Yes.
Yeah, that was nice. They did that for you, though.
You had a nice landing.
You had a nice
landing. I think the top of season eight is not as bad as people, you know, think. There's some interesting things. There's that whole Emma thing, which one day we'll explore that, I think. Okay, Melanie Rose has got some questions from the fans for Jill and maybe Fred as well. What you got?
Well, we did cover a lot of questions, but we did want to revisit if it was the writer's intention for her to be hurt by Brandon from the beginning. And we discovered you were a placeholder, so that answered a lot of fan questions. Everyone's happy to hear that. And how do you feel that you're similar to Tracy, the character, in real life? Did you feel that you could relate to her? Was it a stretch for you to play that character? Tell us a little bit about that.
I think, like I've already said, the newscaster stuff was a bit of a stretch for me, but not, you know, not a huge stretch, but just a little bit different from what I'd ever done before. And then the rest of it, I think that it was pretty close to me. Like, kind of what Larry was talking about before, just kind of, you know, an authentic person who wasn't really 90210, like Beverly Hills. That was just real and honest.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's me, kind of.
Nice.
Well, it came across very nicely. There were a lot of questions about the Hawaii episode, so we covered all of that. It was a really great way to wrap things up and give you some closure, so I think people really appreciated that. There are a lot of questions about working with Tiffany. People liked your relationship. You know, you said she was very professional. Do you keep in touch with her or any of the other cast members?
No, I am. I'm friends with Jason on social media. But no, I have not seen or spoken to any of them in a really long time.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I stopped acting, I would say like around 2003, and went back to school and like kind of went in a whole different direction. So I never really saw them much. You know, I mean, I saw them a little bit like right after. I was friends with Tori for another probably 6 months after Hawaii. And then, you know, that's what happens. You work on a show, you become like a family, and then you're not on the show anymore and you just drift apart.
Yep. Fizzled off a little bit. Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask Amy, for, you know, what do you think looking back on the season 7 story arc of the whole, like, sort of like what happened and whatnot? What is your thoughts on season 7?
You know, I was someone who, I think, for me, I just loved the show, and I did love all 10 seasons. So for me, there's like no bad season of 90210. There's no bad episodes of 90210. I always just say, like, even the bad episode of 90210 is still probably one of my favorite things. I just really liked the show. When it ended, I wrote this article about, at the time, I've now been married more than 10 years, but at the time I said that it was the longest relationship, consistent relationship I had, because it's been 10 years relationship with the show. What struck me, what I'd kind of forgotten about season 7, is how many people were gone. Like, all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, where's Andrea? Like, I'd forgotten how many people were gone. I think I'd forgotten the sheer depth of how many, I think particularly now with the way TV is, and there's like 10 episodes, and it's such a different beast sometimes right now that you think about the sheer volume of episodes now to an out per season, like how much was covered, and like the sheer just like story arcs that were covered in a one season is kind of mind blowing. Like, especially when we went back and watched like episode five, and then the finale, how much was just covered, you know, just a huge storyline. Like we were talking about, like they have an AIDS storyline. They had, I think the show also was always in the forefront of being educational. That AIDS storyline at that time, I think, was very educational.
It was.
A lot of like, especially the show, I always felt like the show or the brunt of its responsibility of the viewers well. Like, it had a lot of younger viewers, and I thought it always took that responsibility very seriously of how they like be entertaining and informative, and a really, you know, even like, you know, just a, I thought that AIDS storyline was really, even looking back at it now, it was handled really well, and especially when you think about how groundbreaking it probably was at the time to have a storyline like that, which, you know, it wasn't, now it would be commonplace, it wasn't then.
Yeah, I mean, even the other one that someone just brought up here, Sherry brought it up, the Valerie with the dad's
Valerie, which one?
Her father.
Well, you know, we kind of enriched her character. We knew it. We always knew we had that. You know, we never really gave what happened to Valerie and from Buffalo, why she came. So we knew we had it. There was going to be a time we were going to need to harvest that. There will be a time we will need that to pull that in. And we did. And I had forgotten one of the mamas and the papas was in the show. I was going, oh my God. And I didn't get her autograph, Fred. Michelle Phillips was in the show. And she was pretty good. I mean,
Good. I love the mamas and the papas.
So me too. You know, we had our daughter in. Mackenzie Phillips was in the intervention episode.
Yes.
And you know, I remember when we cast Michelle, it was a big deal. We heard that she was available. I said yes. So we said yes. And it was, and she really held her own pretty good in some pretty harrowing stuff there. You know, I mean, she gets accused of being, you know, the mother who's letting her daughter be abused. I mean,
yeah. I would love to cover that storyline at some point on this podcast.
Yeah, that was pretty dynamite.
And then you've got the We Interrupt This Program one.
Yes,
you'll pop back in because we are going to cover that.
Yeah.
Did you talk to Trevor? Is he going to?
Fred did the music for that one actually too.
I did, yeah.
We Interrupt This Program.
Yeah, which is a great, great episode. Yeah. I didn't mean to skip over that. Melanie, do you have any other questions? Maybe a Zara question? You got a Zara question?
I do. Zara had a few questions. Were you? We covered most of those. Let's get back to Zara's and let's go to Omer first. He was curious about your least favorite and your most favorite episodes. Hawaii, I imagine, was probably one of the top ones.
That was definitely one of the top ones. I would say, if I put Hawaii aside, I would say probably, oh my gosh, because you know they all go, I would say the first one was probably my least favorite. And I think the unnecessary roughness was the one when she
goes home.
Yeah,
you go home.
Yeah, I think that would be probably my favorite because I got a lot more screen time than usual. And I just, you know, it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else, Melanie?
Well, Zara did want to ask the writers, why couldn't the writers have Brandon and Tracy being married and engaged instead of him and Kelly?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it was always a possibility. Like I said, I did not come back after season 7, so I can't be responsible. You know, maybe if I was coming back, I might have, you know, did another echo back with her because, you know, Brandon, you know, that's what he really liked, a girl who kind of in a way was like his mother, you know, someone who's real. And so he's always going back. So Kelly, in a way, even though they are a perfect couple, but she's certainly not that because she's Beverly Hills too. But when she's with him, she was always more decent, it felt like, and more natural. So I don't know what to say there. I guess it just, you know, we had our stars and the stars had to be served. And that's, you know, again, we talk about serving the show and that's what we all eventually had to do.
Yeah, and I think, right, I think that the fans, sorry to jump in here, but I think the fans really were pulling for Kelly and Brandon to, you know, to be together eventually.
Exactly, just like Donna and David, which we knew was part of the long game, but we had to, you know, to get there, we had to do, you know, 64 episodes of not getting there,
right.
So that's part of the fun of it, you know, it's a little bit mathematical.
I did score the night that that she lost her virginity.
I know. And that was it. That was the last episode I wrote. And like people who built the pyramids, I was killed.
I actually had to have some involvement with Mr. Spelling because his daughter, he couldn't control his daughter in real life, but he could control her on TV. So the deflowering episode was discussed with the composer. How are you going to treat it? You know, that kind of stuff.
Interesting.
Oh, wow.
Very interesting. Yeah.
We're going to do graduation day. We got to do a whole show on
that. That was my finest cue, I think.
It was a great cue. I've talked about that episode. I wrote that with Phil and it was, that was, you know, the end of college. It was a lot of stuff going on, you know, including.
We'll get there. Hey, Jill Kristen, who's a good friend of our show. I think she's in the intro where she slapped her friends. Yeah. She wants to know where you think Jill would be. Where do you think Tracy would be in 2020?
I think that Tracy would be with her husband living on the Galleon Ranch.
Why not?
Taking care of her horses and just living a good life. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Tracy asks us what was it like working with Luke Perry, but he wasn't there at that time.
I didn't work with Luke Perry. And you know what? Something on that. When Luke went into the hospital, I got a zillion texts. Oh my gosh, we're so sorry. And I had to tell everybody, guys, I didn't work with him. I didn't know him.
Yeah.
And it was so sad, but I didn't,
Well, how about this? Speaking of him, you said you were a Dylan girl, right? Growing up?
I really honestly don't remember. I always did like the Bad Boys, so I probably was more on Dylan, but then Dylan left and.
I guess as a fan of the series, what did you love about Dylan, I guess?
I the bad boy image, you know, the motorcycle, the coolness. I heard Christy talking about the whispering. But you know, I mean, he was just cool and sexy, you know.
I'm gonna ask Amy that question too about Luke. What did you love about his performances?
Well, I mean, I definitely think it's that bad boy with a heart of gold, right? Like that he kind of epitomized that character that we've seen, I think, replayed so many times since he kind of made Dylan McKay. Well, he, intimacy with the writers of the show kind of created this character. I just think he was one, just gorgeous. And he was just, I mean, I still think about that the love triangle when he goes to Kelly's, I think it's time I started seeing you, like still one of the best moments of television like ever. There was just something, he just really had that. I think it's not something you see on TV that often. He really had that like spark and that like sexiness that was really just translated through the screen, you know? And I just, you don't see it that often. He just like, there was a vivaciousness to his performance that, and he really just, he was just, I don't think there's that many, there has not been that many characters like him. I think that had such a impact on a show and on a, that, you know, that to create such an iconic character that this many years later, when I can still like think about like when, you know, the chills I got there, you see, you know, because it was just so great. It was just something about the character and the writing and the performance where it all kind of came together. And I don't think that always happens, that kind of magic combination where the performance and the writing are there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I wanted to say something about to Amy, you know, Amy, what grade were you in when you won our super fan contest in 1996?
That's actually not me. That's a different Amy.
You?
I would have loved to have won the super fan contest.
I always thought that was you. Okay.
No, that wasn't me. But it was probably, I started watching the show just as a fan, and then I started becoming a television reporter, a television critic, TV critic. And so I covered the show professionally. So I think we started communicating when I was writing about the show.
Yeah, I knew we had a long communication.
Definitely. But I was a super fan of the show. I will take that title proudly.
Got to look for the other Amy, you know.
Yeah. She's in Massachusetts also. She was.
Yeah. Oh, really?
That's why I was confused.
Yes. Melanie, do you have any more? I'm going to let go with one more question, and then we'll kind of wrap up here.
Yeah, Chase was wondering, did you still continue watching the show after you left?
Good question. No, I did not.
Wow.
No, I did not.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Okay.
Fred didn't probably.
I think a lot of us didn't.
No, yeah. No, I have to say, I did not see one single episode after I left.
Okay.
I was too... It hurt too much.
Yeah, I hear you.
Mm-hmm. And one more quick thing too. You had mentioned before we started that you're teaching theater now. Yes. And one of our fans, Alicia Bogner, was curious if fans of the show in general still recognize you. And then also, your theater students, do you draw on your experience in your teaching as well?
Oh, definitely. Definitely I do draw on my experience. You know, most of my kids, it was so long ago that they don't really know. But last year at open house night, I had one of the moms. Oh my God, 90210 was my favorite show. I remember that. So it does happen sometimes. Yes. When I was on the show, I was like anywhere I went, because like that's the show is so popular. That anywhere I went, I would get recognized. And of course, I was also with Tori a lot of the time, so that way, you know. But even when I was by myself, I got recognized all the time because it was such a popular show. Nowadays, it's like, yeah, it's those women that were that right age, you know, that watched it, and they still, yes, they definitely still remember me. And my kids, my students are not that impressed. They're a little impressed. I think they try to hide it, you know.
Right.
What I was telling Pete, I was telling you guys before is. The thing that really was my claim to fame was kissing Brad Pitt. That was like one of my first TV shows. And that was before he was famous. And anytime anybody hears that, it just like goes around the school like so fast. Oh my God, Miss Novick made out with Brad Pitt. You know,
that's a good one though.
Yeah. Very yes. Cool. All right. Listen, guys, I want to say this. Hey, Larry, yes. October 4th, 2020.
It's going to be the super show.
We're doing the super show.
It's the 30th anniversary premiere date. It's going to be big. We're going to have everyone who's ever been on the podcast and we're going to invite them at one point to jump on. We've got section leaders. We're going to look at you, Amy, for helping us out on this date. It's a Sunday. Maybe you'll run the critics segment. We're doing a breaking out. We've got like Brandon's girlfriend segment, which we've got the critic segment. We've got some fan yeah. form segments. We were going to do a Canadian mafia segment, but then there was a problem or something. I can't remember. We have a Meet the Parents. We'll have like, you know, the Eckhouse and Potter and Catherine That's awesome. Cannon.
Yeah. So we got
to just be a big celebration for that for 3 hours from four to seven Pacific.
So make sure everybody who's listening to this or watching it, wherever you're doing podcasts, save that date. And it's going to be between 4 and 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 Eastern. We are still planning it. And we have a lot more episodes coming up before that happens. Right next week, we'll be back on Wednesday. And Chuck and I and Karen are talking about Isn't It Romantic and Slumber Party. So that should be a lot of fun. And then next Friday, we're back here again, and we're talking One Wedding and a Funeral. And
One Wedding and a Funeral with Rebecca Gayheart and the director of the episode, James Whitmore Jr., and the costumer who made the wedding dress, Molly Campbell. That should be pretty interesting.
So that should be...
obviously, that episode, everyone knows that one, and you know everyone loves that couple, you know.
Yeah, Tony.
So we're really happy that that's going to happen.
Yes. So listen, I'm all about gratitude these days. For Fred, I want to tell you, man, thank you for all the score work that you did on this show. So many of the emotional moments and connections that we have, particularly in this season, came from you and came from what you delivered. It's really, really incredible stuff. And I think the world of Larry. So by default, I think the world of you. And for Jill, I mean, just such incredible work in this season and in that series. The stuff that you did with Jason was just absolutely beautiful, and you brought so much honesty and realness to this character and to the show. And I think it definitely needed it at that. So hey guys, thanks so much for listening and watching us.
Thanks
this
a lot, Amy. Thanks a lot, Melanie.
Thank you.
Next thanks, everyone.
Bye bye. Thank you, Fred.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Stay tuned. All right. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.